Well, for this fifth Sunday, the special topic that we've chosen to address is marriage and parenting. Earlier in the week, my wife asked me what I was preaching on today, and I said marriage, and she said, "Well, you don't know anything about that." And I said, "Well, of course you're right, but I know even less about parenting, so I got marriage and Steve gets parenting." So tonight you'll hear some really helpful principles for parents, leaving me this morning to share some counsel for couples. Several years back when we were still in Idaho, we had a couple up there that, dear friends of ours, they were celebrating their 60th anniversary, and we had a little reception for them one Sunday after church. And so I just asked them, tell us your secret, you know, what's the secret to this success, 60 years together, and how do you have a happy marriage that lasts a lifetime? And he looked at her as if to offer her the chance to speak first, and she said, no, you go ahead. And so he told us the secret, and he said, the secret is very simple. We go out every week. And I thought, wow, that's impressive, you know, 60 years of marriage and you still go on, you still go out, you still go on dates. And he said, absolutely, without fail, every week. I go out on Tuesday, she goes out on Friday. That's what he said. Wasn't what I was expecting, but I suppose there's a lot of wisdom in that. Here's some other words of wisdom gleaned from children. Children were asked these questions. How do you decide who to marry? Alan, who's 10, said, well, you got to find somebody who likes the same stuff. Like, if you like sports, she should like it that you like sports, and she should keep the chips and dip coming. What is the right age to get married? Camille, 10, said, 23 is the best age because you know the person forever by then. But Freddie, who's 6, said, no age is good to get married at. You got to be a fool to get married. Pretty wise for a 6-year-old, huh? How can a stranger tell if two people are married? Derek, who's 8, said, you might have to guess based on whether they seem to be yelling at the same kids. What do you think your mom and dad have in common? Lori, who's 8, said, both don't want any more kids. What do most people do on a date? Lynette, who's 8, said, dates are for having fun, and people should use them to get to know each other. Even boys have something to say if you listen long enough. When is it okay to kiss someone? When they're rich, said Pam, who's 7. Kurt, who's also 7, says, well, the law says you have to be 18, so I wouldn't want to mess with that. Is it better to be single or married? Anita, who's 9, says it's better for girls to be single, but not for boys. Boys need someone to clean up after them. How would the world be different if people didn't get married? Kelvin, who's 8, said there sure would be a lot of kids to explain, wouldn't there? How would you make a marriage work? Ricky, who's 10, said, well, tell your wife that she looks pretty, even if she looks like a truck. I can hardly top that, but what I'd like to do today is give you some key principles for a happy, lasting marriage. Open your Bibles with me then, if you will, to the book of Proverbs. And we'll see what we can come up with. The book of Proverbs, as the title suggests, is a collection of wise sayings. Proverbs are short, pithy, memorable, vivid nuggets of wisdom. The purpose of this collection of Proverbs is stated in chapter 1, verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction. Verse 3, to receive instruction in wise behavior. Do you need wise behavior in marriage? Well, of course you do. Of all places there. Verse 4, to give prudence to the naive. Were you naive when you got married? Yes, we all were. So this one book in the Bible, of all the books in the Bible, should be our companion throughout married life. You need wisdom. You need instruction in wise behavior. You need prudence. You need understanding. You get it, even if you're young or naive or even foolish, by seeking it. Proverbs 2, verse 1, my son, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. If you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God, and so on. For the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. So we must have wisdom and we must seek wisdom. But what is it? What is wisdom that makes it so valuable? The Old Testament word is chokmah, and that word means simply skill. That's the word that's used in the Old Testament for the gold and silver smiths who made all of the instruments and implements for worship in the tabernacle. It's the word used for all the craftsmen and masons who built the temple. So it means skill. You know a trade, you're wise. You know how to do something. You have a skill, you have a trade. So the word wisdom means skill for living. Skill for living. It's not how much you know. It's not how intelligent you are. It's about knowing how things work, knowing how to get things done, knowing how to be productive, how to function, how to relate to people, how to get along in the world. That's the idea. It's very practical. We could call it common sense, except it isn't, right? It isn't common at all. So wisdom is the goal of Proverbs, that you would have the skill to live well, to be successful. As it relates to marriage, then, it is that you would have the skill or you would have the know-how to make your marriage work. That's what wisdom is all about. The know-how to make your marriage work. No marriage is perfect. No husband is perfect. No wife is perfect. There is no match made in heaven, really. I mean, the match may be made in heaven, but it is forged on earth, and so we all need wisdom. And as you study wisdom literature, both the book of Proverbs and especially the book of Ecclesiastes, you discover another little wrinkle to this. And that is this: we are living in a fallen world, right? We are living in a cursed universe. And so wisdom is not just skill for living, it's skill for living here in a cursed world, right? In a world that is sin-cursed and fallen, where things are not ideal. A lot of young people, especially, are idealistic. You know, they have a very idealistic view of the world, a very idealistic view of marriage. And they have the mindset that if they just do certain things the right way, their life, their marriage, their kids, their health, their finances, everything's going to work out right. It's going to work out just as they've planned. They have it all laid out. Well, that's what the book of Proverbs calls naive. You're naive. Doesn't work that way. There is no fail-proof formula. There are no guarantees. Laws and rules get broken because we live in a broken world. It's deteriorating. It's falling apart. It's under the curse and weight of sin. And so you have to recognize that, first of all. You have to understand where you are in the flow of history. You are not Adam and Eve living in the Garden of Eden. Nor are you Abraham and Sarah, you know, living in the kingdom age where the lion lies down with the lamb and a baby can play by the pit of a cobra. We're between those. We're living in a fallen, cursed world. And so this is not the ideal. This is not the ideal. This is the real. In the ideal, you wouldn't need wisdom. Here and now, you do. And it's interesting to me that I was thinking about how even our wedding vows sort of reflect that, do they not? For rich or for poor, in sickness and in health, for better or for worse. See, that's the real world, isn't it? Things do not stay the same. Things change. Things fluctuate. They go back and forth from one extreme to the other. And you live with those extremes, and that's why you need wisdom, is to cope with that. That's frankly what wisdom is. Wisdom is how you keep your wits about you when everyone else is losing theirs. Wisdom then is skill for living in this fallen world as a sinner with other sinners through good times and bad without going insane, without losing your mind, without giving up. Wisdom is what keeps you, on the one hand, from being arrogant and so sure of yourself that you have unrealistic ideas and expectations that can never be met, and so you end up in extreme depression. And on the other hand, wisdom is what keeps you from being so pessimistic and cynical that you never do anything, you never try anything, you never enjoy life at all. Wisdom is how you make the most of a less than ideal situation. And that's what you have. That's what you always have in this life. Right now you have that. You have a less than ideal marriage. You have a less than ideal husband, a less than ideal wife, a less than ideal income, a less than ideal job, a less than ideal neighborhood, a less than ideal house, a less than ideal relationship with your teenager, a less than ideal everything. So how are you going to deal with that? How are you going to keep your vow now that you know charm is deceitful and beauty is vain? You need wisdom. And the good news is it's available. It's available to all. Proverbs 1, verse 20, wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts up her voice in the square, crying out. Come, right? Listen to me, you naive ones. How long will you love being stupid? Turn to my reproof. Chapter 8, verse 1. Does not wisdom call? And understanding lift up her voice. To you, verse 4, O men, I call. And so on. O naive ones, understand prudence. Fools, understand wisdom. Chapter 9, the text that Dale read, same idea. Wisdom has built her house. She has set her table. She sent out the invitations. Come, eat, drink, forsake your folly, and live. So the book of Proverbs calls us to wisdom. It calls us to pursue and prize wisdom by reading and meditating on the words of this book. Now, what wisdom does it offer for marriage? That's our concern today. And really, everything in the book of Proverbs applies because it's all about wisdom and you need all the wisdom you can get. But what are some of the key things? What are some of the key themes that apply directly to married life? Let me just give you five. We could give you more, but we'll just stop at that. Number one, how about this? Fear the Lord. Fear the Lord. That is where it all begins. In fact, that's where wisdom begins. Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You have to fear the Lord. That's non-negotiable. That's essential. You have to fear the Lord, which is to say you have to know the Lord, because to know Him is to fear Him. Do you know the Lord? Do you love the Lord? Do you fear the Lord? Do you live with a continual sense of awareness that the Lord is present, watching, ruling over your life? The sense that He owns you. You belong to Him. You answer to Him. Do you live with that sort of a sense of reverence and awe for the Lord? That's the beginning of wisdom, and that's the beginning of a successful marriage. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. If you're single and you wonder, what should I be looking for in a guy, or what should I be looking for in a girl? Look for someone with a knowledge of the Holy One. Find the person that knows God better than anybody else you know and marry them. Girls are always talking about guy. Oh, he's so understanding. Knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So that's what you want. That's what you want to find. Somebody that really knows God, has a sense of the holiness of God, is traumatized by the holiness of God, lives in the fear of God. Does he know God? Does she know God? If you're dating someone that doesn't fear the Lord, doesn't know the Lord, why? Right? What could you possibly have in common? What future do you expect to have with someone who doesn't know your God? You are unequally yoked in the worst possible way. So you must both know and fear the Lord. That's the foundation of everything. A marriage that is built on anything else is built on sand. Chapter 8, verse 13, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride, arrogance, and the evil way and the perverted mouth I hate." 10:27 says, "The fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be shortened." 14:26 says, In the fear of the Lord there is strong confidence, and His children will have refuge." 14:27, "The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, that one may avoid the snares of death." 15:33, "The fear of the Lord is the instruction for wisdom, and before honor comes humility." 16:6, "By the fear of the Lord one keeps away from evil." 19:23, "The fear of the Lord leads to life, that one may sleep satisfied, untouched by evil." 22:4, "The reward of humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life." And chapter 23, verse 17 says, "Do not let your heart envy sinners, but live in the fear of the Lord always." So that's essential, right? It's essential for a healthy, lasting marriage. I can trust my wife because I know she fears the Lord. She can trust me because she knows I fear the Lord. That's foundational. And what a blessing, right, to have that common commitment and know that about each other. And we've observed this over the years. You have too, just in comparing God's grace in our lives to other people, our peers, family members, and friends, and so on. Those who are Christians and marry Christians do better than the other ones. Duh, right? That's a no-brainer. Those who fear the Lord and marry someone who fears the Lord, they, by God's grace, tend to make it. And the other ones, not so much. So that has to be a foundational thing. Now, if you're unequally yoked, on the other hand, don't despair. Scripture gives encouragement to you as well. 1 Corinthians 7:16, "How do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? How do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife?" So the answer is not to bail out and try something else. The answer for you, living in the fear of the Lord, means staying married and trusting the Lord to work and to accomplish His purposes in spite of your, again, less than ideal situation. Secondly, not only fear your God, but I would say honor your spouse. Appreciate your spouse. Honor them. Appreciate them. Proverbs 18:22 says, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." This is God's blessing to you, see, this wife. 19:14 says, "House and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord." Your parents may leave you riches, only God can give you what you really need, which is a prudent wife. And chapter 12, verse 4 says, "An excellent wife is the crown of her husband." So the question I could ask men, do you appreciate your wife? Do you honor her? Do you cherish her? Do you see her as God's gift to you? Do you acknowledge her worth to you? Proverbs 31:28 says, "Her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, 'Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all.'" Do you praise your wife? If she fears the Lord, if she is a woman who loves God and fears God and lives for God, you are blessed. Proverbs 31:30 says, "A woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised." I mean, that's the ultimate prize, men, is to have a woman who fears the Lord and still loves you. Stop nitpicking about all the things that you wish she would do or do differently, and appreciate her for the one all-important, indispensable thing she does do. She fears the Lord. You have a wife who loves you, who puts up with you, who's still with you. You have obtained favor from the Lord. You have it better than you deserve. So stop trying to change her and cherish her. Wives, how about you, though? Do you honor him? Do you honor your husband? Do you appreciate him? Are you constantly reminding him of how he falls short? Ephesians 5:33, the one little thing that Paul says there in that whole discussion of the church and Christ and the husband and the wife, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. Respects her husband. Do you do that? Do you speak highly of him? Do you look admiringly at him? Do you respect him? I think of the elderly couple sitting on the porch in rocking chairs, and the wife looks over at her husband of, 50-plus years and says, "I'm proud of you, Paul." And he looks over at her and says, "I'm tired of you too, Ma." In wisdom literature, there are many "it is better" comparisons. One of them is Proverbs 21:9. "It is better to live in a corner of the roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman." I don't know if you've read Proverbs much, but that actually gets repeated several times, doesn't it? 21:19, "It is better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman." 25:24, "It is better to live in a corner of the roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman." Ladies, if your husband's never home, maybe there's a reason. If he's always making excuses as to why he needs to go up into the attic, if he spends all his time in the garage or the shop, he's not tinkering. He's hiding. He's avoiding. Maybe there's a reason. Proverbs 19:13 says, "A foolish son is destruction to his father, and the contentions of a wife are a constant dripping." Drip. Drip. You're laying in bed and all of a sudden you hear the drip in the bathtub or the shower. Will you go check that? I did. You can't tighten it enough. It's the valve. I got to replace it. Drip. 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 27:15, a constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. That's water torture. That's what that's talking about. It's not talking about sitting by the window and, oh, isn't it lovely to hear the rain outside? No. You're tied down with a rope and the water's dripping on your forehead. That's the picture. If you're nagging your husband, you're driving him away. So stop doing that. So much of this, by the way, honoring and appreciating one another, it all comes down to contentment, right? Instead of being contentious, be content. Proverbs 15:16, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. 15:17, better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox, that means a feast, served with hatred. So if you have a home where there's love, where there's righteousness, where there's reverence for God, you're rich, you're blessed. Be thankful for that. Be content. Be kind. Enjoy each other. Honor and appreciate your spouse. They are exactly what God knows you need them to be. Third, you have to watch your words. You have to watch your words. After a quarrel, a wife said to her husband, "You know, I was a fool when I married you." And the husband replied, "Yes, dear, but I was in love and I didn't notice." You got that one, huh? So the first thing you have to learn in marriage is that just because it's true doesn't mean you should say it. You have to watch your words. You have to bite your tongue sometimes. And this, as you know, is another major theme in the book of Proverbs. So many exhortations that apply to this issue, and believe me, they all apply in marriage. Chapter 15 will suffice. It's loaded, really, with exhortations about guarding your speech. 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Verse 2, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. Verse 4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. Verse 7, the lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the heart of fools are not so. Let me see here. 23, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. 26, evil plans are an abomination to the Lord, but pleasant words are pure. And then verse 28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. So all these cautions, all these warnings, right, about your speech, your words. Chapter 17, verse 18, or chapter 17, verse 27 and 28 is probably everyone's favorite. He who restrains his words has knowledge. And he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent. Better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt, in other words. And they say men in particular prove that the speed of light is faster than the speed of sound. How so? Because most men appear bright until you hear them speak. They're like a broken refrigerator. The door's open, but the light's not on. Our words do tremendous harm, don't they? Potentially. And at the same time, tremendous good. Proverbs 18:21 captures that. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And those who love it will eat its fruit. Here's the potential that your words have. Death and life in the same tongue. And of course, James 3, isn't it? James 3 that talks about that. You know, that we could use our tongue for such good and such evil at the same time. It ought not to be. So we have to work really hard at this. And in marriage, we have to work really hard at it. Chapter 18, by the way, verse 6 says, "A fool's lips bring strife, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are the snare of his soul." 21:23, here's another one that certainly relates to marriage. "He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles." You want to guard your soul from troubles? Watch your mouth. You have two ears and one mouth. That should tell you something, right? You should probably listen twice before you speak once. You have teeth around your tongue for a reason. Keep your tongue between your teeth, right? Bite your tongue, bite your lip. If you can't say something nice, don't say anything. Or better yet, if you can't say something nice, why? Why not, right? You're not thinking hard enough. If you're wrong, speak up. If you're right, shut up. Let another praise you and not your own lips. Proverbs 25:11 is a great picture, like apples of gold in settings of silver. That's what we want our words to be like, the right words in the right circumstances. And if you struggle with that, and who doesn't, Ephesians 4:29 is a great verse to just memorize, right? "Let no unwholesome speech proceed out of your mouth, but only that which gives grace, that it may meet the need of the moment, edify." So you have to work on that. The fourth thing, and just a couple more here quickly. Fourth thing I would say, do your work. Do your work. Whatever the sphere for your work is, whether it's in the home or outside the home, do it. Work hard. Be diligent. Be responsible. That's another theme, obviously, throughout the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 6, verse 6, "Go to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief officer or ruler prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and your poverty will come in like a vagabond and your need like an armed man." Learn from the ant. Go watch. Learn from natural revelation that you can't be lazy and successful. You can't be sleeping all the time and productive and eat well. You have to learn to make hay while the sun shines. And that's really the notable thing about the Proverbs 31 woman, isn't it? Her diligence. She burns the candle at both ends. She works hard to provide for the needs of her household, and she does not eat the bread of idleness. That's why her children rise up and bless her husband also. So we need to look at that. Am I diligent? Am I working hard? Am I doing my share? Am I carrying my part of the load here? That's a basic ingredient for I think, a happy marriage. Nobody likes a sluggard. It's really hard to stay madly in love with a lazy slob. I would assume. I don't know. So don't be that. Don't be that. Work hard. Be diligent with your time, your money. Fifthly, I would add, guard your heart. Guard your heart. And this is really an issue that we could have camped on all morning. Just fidelity, faithfulness in marriage. That is the theme, the dominant theme in chapters 5, 6, and 7. You have this whole discussion of the adulterous woman and how to avoid the adulterous woman, how to avoid adultery. How do you? How do any of us in this sensual age avoid the temptation, the temptations of sexual sin? And that's what these Proverbs are for. Meditate on them. Chapter 5, chapter 6, chapter 7. I could summarize with maybe three things. One, stay away from the places where you know that temptation is the strongest. Right? That's the sort of gist of chapter 17. Don't go down her street. That's what the naive person is doing, wandering off somewhere he shouldn't be, when he shouldn't be. You know where the prostitutes and the harlots hang out. Don't go there. You know who the loose guys and the loose girls are. Don't hang out there. Secondly, you have to count the cost. That's a major sort of sub-theme in all of these things, is counting the cost, looking at what it'll cost you if you do this. You know, what if you have an affair with your neighbor's wife? Will you get away with it, first of all? No. Chapter 6, verse 27, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not get burned? And then, will it be worth it? Will it make me happy? Will it bring the fulfillment and the satisfaction that I'm longing for? No. I'll be miserable. 6:29, whoever touches her will not go unpunished. 6:31, when he is found, he must repay sevenfold. He must give all the substance of his house. 7:23, it will cost him his life. So the obvious encouragement there is count the cost before you plunge in here and pursue that lust to its consummation. But really, I think the key thing is enjoy your mate. That's chapter 5, verse 15, right? Drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well. That's the simple solution. You have a God-given way to gratify your desires with your spouse. So be exhilarated always with her love. But that's key, obviously, to a happy, lasting marriage. We have to be faithful. We have to be faithful to each other. So these are the prominent principles that I think are critical for making marriage work in a fallen world. Fear your God, honor your spouse, watch your words, do your work, guard your heart. Marriage is really a very simple thing. It comes down to this. You made a vow, now keep it. You said I do, do. And at the same time, remember that at the end of the day, a happy marriage is the union of two really good forgivers. Right? Because you're both really good at sinning, so you're going to both need to be really good at forgiving. Colossians 3:13, bearing with one another and forgiving each other, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. So the rules for a happy marriage. Number one, never both be angry at the same time. Number two, never yell at each other unless the house is on fire. Number three, if one of you has to win an argument, let it be your mate. Number four, if you have to criticize, do it lovingly. Number five, never bring up mistakes of the past. Number six, neglect the whole world rather than each other. Number seven, never go to sleep with an argument unsettled. Number eight, at least once every day, try to say one kind or complimentary thing to your spouse. Number nine, when you have done something wrong, be ready to admit it and ask forgiveness. And number 10, it takes two to make a quarrel, and the one in the wrong is the one who does the most talking. The bonds of matrimony are like all other bonds. They take time to mature. They take time to mature. And so honestly, if you want a happy marriage, you have to stay together long enough for it to mature. That's really the key. Stay together. It's kind of like playing Texas Hold'em poker, which I never do. But the key is to stay in the game long enough so you can win at the end. And that's the key for us as well. So I pray that you'll have the grace and the wisdom to do that. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for this instruction. And the book of Proverbs, wisdom literature, Lord, what a blessing it is. Pray that we would grow in our wisdom, Lord, in our skill, our know-how to keep our vows and to have the kinds of marriages that you intend, marriages that honor you, marriages that bless others, marriages that give the church credibility, marriages that showcase the power and the beauty of the gospel, marriages that reflect Christ and his bride, the church. So give us the grace to pursue and practice these things for his glory, for his sake, we pray in his name.